This is your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about the Republicans' plan to use the so-called debt ceiling as leverage to target major programs such as Social Security, Medicare, and food stamps while pushing for even more tax cuts for the rich. David K. Johnston has spent nearly 55 years in daily journalism. He won the 2001 Pulitzer Prize for beat reporting and is the author of four best-selling books, including The Big Cheat, How Donald Trump Fleeced America and enriched himself and his family. David K. Johnston started DC Report 6 years ago to report on what politicians do, not just what they say. He's stepping down as editor-in-chief, but will remain as an advisor and occasional contributor. His next book is The Prosperity Tax, a new federal tax code for the 21st century economy. Hi, David. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Glad to be with you, Rose.
Great to have you. Arthur Delaney is a senior reporter for HuffPost, where he covers politics and the economy. Hi, Arthur. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Great to be back.
Great to have you. So first off, given all the news that's happened this week, I'm just wondering what really stood out for both of you this week. David, why don't we start off with you?
Well, I'm going to do something very local down in my hometown of Santa Cruz. The University of California, Santa Cruz, is opening an arts and cultural center on the west side of town with about 300 free parking spaces. And the significance of that is that higher education is under a very broad attack from conservatives in America. All you have to do is read the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which is constantly telling you college isn't worth it and colleges are the enemy of American society. And this is one of a number of steps around the country where you are seeing colleges and universities try to engage their communities and not be, as UC Santa Cruz is, off on the far edge of the city, unseen by anyone who's not a student or a faculty member.
And where did you read this piece?
In Outlook. Outlook is a online news service in Santa Cruz started by a guy who has been questioning the way newspapers, legacy newspapers, like the Santa Cruz Sentinel and San Jose Mercury and the Chronicle have operated. And it's proven to be, in my view, quite successful, needing only, you know, a larger audience to get more advertisers to hire even more journalists.
Great. Well, thank you, David. It's always great to learn more about these new publications, and they're so neat. Arthur, what about you? What did you see this week that caught your attention?
I'd like to highlight a story by my colleague Dave Jamieson, who is HuffPost's labor reporter. The headline is, "When this pilot quit her job, her employer billed her $20,000. And the story is about the phenomenon of what are called training repayment agreement provisions, or TRAPs, in which you sign up for a job and you agree to in a contract to repay your employer for training if you leave the job within a certain amount of time. This is obviously like an abusive labor practice, and it's something that the FTC could crack down on the way that they crack down on non-compete agreements. And it's the Department of Transportation might crack down on this, not the FTC, but you get the idea. And it's a very compelling story by my colleague Dave, who's the best labor reporter in America.
Well, thank you for that. I actually read that story. She's only 37, and she filed a proposed class action lawsuit in federal court in Puerto Rico because that's where she was based. So, wow, thank you for bringing that one up, Arthur. Do you know how common is this?
This example with a $20,000 bill is rare. I think the non-compete agreements that we saw were more common. There's a famous example of a PetSmart dog groomer being hit with a $5,000 bill for the grooming academy at PetSmart. I'm sorry. I don't think we know exactly how common they are, but they're, you know, if it's happening at a big retail employer like PetSmart, it's something that's certainly out there.
Hmm. Wow. Well, thank you for that. I wanted to ask both of you before we talk about what the Republicans are doing. About our last segment about these widespread protests and strikes in France over the government's plan to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. We just did a couple of shows last week about how many people in the United States are working well into their 70s. And David, the segment we just did reminded me of a story, many, many stories that were written about this man, Rory McCarty. He is 82 years old, working at Walmart. When a guy went into Walmart and saw him, bagging items, he put it on TikTok. And it raised more than $140,000. So this 82-year-old is now able to retire. And I have to say, major media wrote this piece or broadcast this piece as of such a feel-good story, rather than really getting into why an 82-year-old is still working at Walmart.
Well, on one level, Rose, it's actually good and lengthens people's lives that they're active, whether they're working or they're volunteers or they're gardening. But the reason that we have people in their 80s who have to work in order to eat is because we have not done a proper job of taking care of the costs of old age. There is no escaping the costs of old age unless you want to start killing people because they're superannuated, like me. And there's a whole series of actions behind this. For example, back in the 1990s, the Democrats, in order to squeeze a little bit more money out of taxpayers, imposed a rule that blocks the proper full funding of defined benefit pension plans. It's the kind where you get a check. The company is responsible after you leave and get a check every month. And they created a system to underfund these plans. Then we developed the 401k system, which was never intended to be anything but a sop to the finance industry, and expected people to A, put aside money out of their cash wages, and B, manage their own money, when we know that that's a specialized skill, just like dentistry and heart surgery. So we have this really serious problem of not addressing solvable systemic problems. Why? Well, there's no votes in them. It's much easier to rail about insignificant things that engage people emotionally than to deal with creating a financially sound system that serves everybody.
Right. And David, to your point, a lot of older people are working for social interaction. In the case of this 82-year-old who goes by Butch, he said he was in major debt, so he couldn't retire anytime soon, let alone see his family in Florida.
There's a huge difference between people like me, I'm 74, who do office work, and people like my late brother, if he was still around, who was literally a ditch digger. Mm. You can't do that kind of work in your 70s and 80s, and in my brother's case, not even his 60s or late 50s.
Right, and that is exactly what the people in France are saying right now. Well, let's dive in. Well, it's all related, really, talking about the Republican Party's plan to cut Social Security, Medicare, and food stamps. The debt is getting nonstop coverage in the media. Just a general question for both of you. What are your thoughts about how this is being covered so far? Arthur, you cover these stories extensively. What are your thoughts about the overall coverage in the major media?
Well, I am covering this myself. And we had a story at HuffPost 2 weeks ago about how there actually was no Republican plan. They were asking Joe Biden to come up with the cuts for them. And this week we've seen that idea come to the fore, and the New York Times did that story too. So to do a little media criticism, I would just like to say I'm glad everyone has caught up. I don't think there's anything wrong with the coverage besides they're behind HuffPost, though. It's true that this is going on, that there is a threat from Republicans to hold the debt ceiling hostage, which could potentially trigger a financial crisis and a recession. But a lot of the coverage may be confusing because there's no actual debate going on. There are no demands yet. It's just posturing between Joe Biden and Kevin McCarthy, the Republican Speaker of the House, over which guy is more reasonable. And now they're like having meetings, and McCarthy's like, well, I did a good job making Joe Biden have that meeting. He's going to call me in a couple of days. And Kevin McCarthy, and I think Joe Biden has done a decent job of getting Kevin McCarthy to say, we will take Social Security and Medicare off the table, which is which when he first started saying it was a surprisingly definitive statement.
Should we believe him?
Well, they haven't said what they were going to do, and they had said that they would try to reform those programs as part of this process, though they were never specific. You don't have to believe him. However, it is a definitive statement, and if he wanted to climb down from it, that would be politically painful for him. But it was already obvious, I think, to most people who understand the federal budget and understand politics, that there was no way they were going to go there, because they would, for one thing, not be able to win 218 votes for that. They're not going to get their own conference to agree to do that, even though they themselves had started this conversation. They never got past the entirely abstract notion that, hey, we ought to do something about entitlement spending. I just don't think they're serious about it.
David, what do you think?
Well, I want to start off by pointing out that this whole debate is gratuitous. We have a debt ceiling only because of an effort to mollify conservatives and Wall Street during World War I, 106 years ago. There is no reason to have this debt ceiling. Secondly, Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, one of the Civil War amendments, says the validity of the debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for the payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. The Constitution is very clear about this. Now, heaven only knows, with some of the judges who have Donald Trump has gotten appointed to the bench and their bizarre views of the Constitution, what would happen if this were challenged. But the fact is, our Constitution says that the government's debt shall not be challenged. If the Republicans really wanted to lower the deficit, and by the way, under Joe Biden, the deficit is coming down really fast. One of the things they could do is stop borrowing money to finance tax cuts for the largest corporations and very wealthy people like Donald Trump. That's how we financed the 2017 Trump Republican tax cut law. They are borrowing the money, which means it's not a tax cut for all of us. The rest of us are facing increased federal debt, which requires more interest over time, and which is simply a deferred tax increase, posing as tax savings. The suggestion, by the way, that we would not pay our debts would be horrendous forever for the American economy. We make a fortune, Rose, printing U.S. dollars that are sought in places like Argentina and Egypt that don't have sound currencies. It's a huge profit center for us. We have enormous influence because the U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency, and the Republicans are helping most of all the communist Chinese dictatorship in Beijing, which would like to make the Chinese renminbi the world reserve currency. And the fact that the Republicans are helping a communist regime is indicative of how ignorant they are of how government and economics work.
To your point about taxes, David, Senator Elizabeth Warren had an op-ed in the Boston Globe, and she wrote, "The House Republican plan for the debt ceiling is about protecting the wealthy and the well-connected from paying their fair share in taxes, nothing more and nothing less." Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich had an op-ed in The Guardian, and he wrote, "By 2018, the 400 wealthiest American households paid a lower total tax rate, including federal, state, and local taxes, than any other income group. Their overall tax rate was only 23%. It was 70% in 1950. He wrote, in the first full year of the Trump tax cuts, the federal budget deficit increased by $113 billion, while corporate tax receipts fell by about $90 billion, which would account for 80% of the deficit increase. And yet, in the radio stories I'm hearing about this, David, I'm not hearing at all about the tax cuts.
No, you're not. And I think that that's a failure of the Democrats. I mean, let's keep in mind that most journalism, like it or not, is an accurate recounting of what sources tell reporters. Well, the Democrats should be raising this very issue. They should be pointing out that in 2018, corporate income tax revenues fell, you mentioned $90 billion. Let me give it context. It fell by a third. A third. Did you get a one-third tax cut? No. In fact, many millions of Americans, especially upper-middle-class Americans, their total taxes, state and federal, went up under the Republican plan. So I've criticized the Democrats for I don't know how many years that they have got to learn messaging. The Republicans are masters at marketing, and they have these big organizations like the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation that are the ideological equivalent of Madison Avenue. They are ideological marketing organizations, and they find ways to make things that are bad for you sound good. They're no different than the people who say drink Coca-Cola, which is just brown sugar water and is not good for you, and you'll be so happy. And the Democrats just don't have anything like that. They are, frankly, incompetent at messaging.
Well, to your point, David, I think what I've been noticing is how casual hosts and reporters are talking about the Republicans potentially cutting Social Security. And Arthur, I'm thinking about my loved ones who rely on Social Security and the 66 million seniors receiving a Social Security check every month. A lot of people, especially older women, mostly rely on Social Security to get by. And it's incredibly difficult. $1,200 a month, $1,000 a month. And so to hear that this could possibly be cut so casually, can you just remind us how important Social Security is to people who are struggling to make ends meet?
Well, before Social Security, we had poorhouses where when people were old and infirm, we would send them away to live with other old people and criminals and people with mental problems. But and so the introduction of monthly payments for retirees after the Great Depression completely changed that situation and slashed elderly poverty and is now an important way that we organize our society. But I think that the way the subtext of most stories about Republicans proposing to touch Social Security is that oh my God, they are actually grasping for what is in a cliche referred to as the third rail of American politics. In other words, the electrified subway rail that if you touch it, you're going to die. Why are they talking about doing that? It's not politically advantageous for them. And that is why Kevin McCarthy has, in the last week, pivoted to saying, we will leave those off the table. I think the rest of the media ecosystem has not caught up to that message. But Republicans have begun to abandon their talking points where they said, oh, yeah, we got to deal with entitlements. Their leaders are not saying that anymore. The House Freedom Caucus guys are saying they agree with McCarthy. We got to never mind about that. We got to leave those alone.
In the Washington Post, Tony Rahm reports that others, GOP members, have talked about, based on a detailed plan, to raise the Social Security retirement age to 70, which would target younger people who have yet to obtain federal benefits.
That is a plan that the Republican Study Committee, which is a group of House lawmakers who churn out policy proposals that they get from places like the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute. And it's just stuff that sits on the shelf. It's not something they cooked up for this now. It's been out there for a while, and it's something that they produce so that they can say, look, we have produced a budget document that would balance the federal budget in 10 years. But politically, it's not a realistic plan at all, because it would be massively unpopular and they'd all lose their jobs. While it is there, it's not at the forefront of their plans. Nothing is. They have nothing. And it's looking likely that after all this big talk, they will try to go after a small amount of discretionary spending. I think they could also go after federal food benefits, which used to be called food stamps, which is a big deal. But I think they're chickening out and they're not going to go after Social Security like we've been hearing from them since the fall.
Just briefly, we're almost out of time. Do you think that they will go after food stamps even more? Because as you reported just yesterday, 16 million households will see an average reduction of about $82 per person in food benefits. The benefits are going to be cut as the pandemic programs expire.
Yeah, so there's absolutely stunningly massive cut to food stamps, just returning to their pre-pandemic level. That's going to be a big deal for companies like Walmart, not to mention the 20 million households or the 16 million households that are directly affected. But no matter what, later this year, there will be a big congressional policy debate about nutrition assistance, whether it's part of the Republican debt ceiling standoff or not, because there's a every 5 years legislative process called a farm bill where the SNAP program comes in for an overhaul. So no matter what, there will be a debate over nutrition assistance. In the past, Republicans have foundered when they've pursued a right-wing reform to that program. And I've spoken to the man in charge of it on the Hill, and he's not indicating that he's hungry to do, to take a real swing at it and cut benefits. So we'll be talking about it, but I don't know if they'll go big.
We're definitely going to do a show about this. David, this is all so brutal. I mean, we just did a show about food banks and how demand at food banks is even higher than it was during the pandemic. I mean, people are really hurting out there. So your final thoughts in our remaining minute?
Well, if you raise Social Security, let me point out, to 70, the life expectancy for Black males right now is 68 years old. There's a racist component to this by the Republican study group that we shouldn't miss. We have a fundamental problem with compensation for services and how the rules set by government are distributing the resources of our economy. 92% of all the pay raises in America in 2020 went to people making over $1 million a year. 29% in 2021 went to people making over $1 million a year. And we need to have a serious discussion in this country about compensation for services. We're adding lots of jobs. Availability of jobs is not the issue. It's payment for them. What we're developing is a system that is rapidly increasing the income and wealth of the top 10th of 1%. That's basically $2.5 million and up of income. Pushing down and suppressing everybody else's income. That's what we should be talking about. It's not sexy, but it's what matters.
So true. Thank you so much. David K. Johnston is a longtime journalist who started DC Report to report on what politicians do, not just what they say. Arthur Delaney is a senior reporter for HuffPost. Arthur and David, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your Calls Media Roundtable.